What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 395 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the program on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, and you can follow along on Facebook and Twitter slash X, whatever you're calling it these days, for the latest social updates. Great to be back with you folks this week. Got a pretty good episode. A lot of stuff to get to today. And you may have noticed from the social pages, kind of not sure about Guest Friday this week, but we'll keep you updated in terms of whether we're able to record that this week. But got a great episode for you today. Plenty of Red Sox as the season got started over the weekend. Some Patriots news that we'll get to. I've kind of been dying to talk about that since some news came out last week. Get to a little Celtics, a little Bruins as their seasons are, or the regular seasons are coming to an end. Obviously they'll be postseason for one of the teams. Got a little Revolution too. They got their first win of the season over the weekend, so we'll talk about that as well. Would like to say thank you to Eric Bellier for coming back on Guest Friday last week. Great to have Eric back. It had been a while since we had him, but great to talk baseball and kind of just some thoughts about the season as the season got underway last week. So if you've not listened to that, you can go ahead and take a listen. So I think we are going to start with baseball today. Start with the Red Sox, obviously. Not the best start for the team over the weekend. Clearly got started in a positive way with the season opener last Thursday with, obviously the heroics from Willy Abreu, who homered twice in that first game of the season, homered in the sixth inning and then go ahead home run in the ninth inning. He had a great series, was 7 for 10, I think, in the series with the Rangers, had a number of walks too. But he was great. I think that one of kind of the few guys that I think had good opening series offensively. Obviously, I think if the Red Sox had done better, win loss wise, we're probably sitting here talking about how outstanding Christian Campbell was in the first weekend of the series, first weekend of the season. And obviously, we still can talk about how great that he was. 6 for 14, got a hit in his first game, couple hits, including a home run on Friday, which was great. And I think just looking pretty comfortable. I think that that's kind of the biggest thing. A guy that I think probably a lot of us had kind of, I don't want to say concerns, but wonders about, like, okay, what is this guy going to be like when the season starts, making his major league debut, and what are the lights going to be too bright? And they certainly weren't. I thought that he was solid, good, solid defensively. I think he had the first putout that he had, he almost bobbled, which I kind of was like, okay, there are the nerves. But I think really after that first game, settled in really nicely and, had a number of extra base hits. The home run on Friday, had a couple doubles over the weekend as well. So I would say that, he assimilated really well. And I think that's a good sign, to see that somebody that I think initially, I think out of the gate in spring training was having some issues, really wasn't hitting very much at all. But I mean, a great way to start the season. I think you wish that the performance of the team would be a little bit better so you could feel good, but or you could feel better. But I don't think that it's much to be concerned about because honestly, I think you look at some of these games this weekend, Red Sox got some pretty solid pitching. Not perfect, of course, but I think good enough starting pitching that gave you the chance to win. And I think really that's all you can ask for. Was it perfect? No, I think, Fitz had some issues yesterday, giving up home runs in the sixth inning that, ended up being the difference. But I think, overall, you've gotten good quality starting pitching outings. It's not perfect, obviously, but I think, decent enough. I don't want to say that the starts have been great or anything. I think even the Crochet start in that opener, wasn't great. He was fine, but I think it's solid enough. Again, solid enough to give you chances to win. And I think ultimately the Red Sox just couldn't find that, big hit, so to speak, in the games that they lost over the weekend. Really, I think other than that first game that, Abreu hits the home runs, they really didn't get a big hit the rest of the weekend. Really, if you think about it, a couple of their big bats didn't really seem to do much. Casas had one hit in the series. Obviously Devers had his huge struggles, which obviously we'll talk about. And, Bregman, I don't think was too good either, but it's like, it's a long season. Things like this happen. And I think it's like, you can't get too, overly, I think it's important to not get too overly positive or negative based on the performances of guys early on in the season. Kind of like you don't want to get overly excited about positive or negative performances in spring training. It's still that early part of the season. The team's played one series, and I kind of think we probably need to wait a couple series before we make any kind of, big determinations about what this team is, what certain players are. We haven't even seen a full turn of the rotation yet, and you'll see that this afternoon when Sean Newcomb starts against the Orioles. Obviously Red Sox didn't intend that he was going to be starting games this season, obviously with the injuries that they have. But, I think it's important to kind of be a little bit patient in terms of, seeing what you have in terms of the healthier rotation, kind of give guys some series to kind of get things going offensively, before we kind of make determinations about what this team is going to be. Obviously there is major concern with Rafael Devers, I would say. I think that obviously not having a hit, striking out as many times as he has, I think it's, I don't, probably shouldn't have said major concern, but I think it's a concern. Like, I think it's coming out of the gate to start the season, you never want to start that way. But, there may be an element of, some mental stuff going on in terms of, Devers kind of realizing that, okay, he's going to be kind of that everyday DH and not, in the field. And I think it probably throws off his routine a little bit. And I think that it just is, mentally a thing for him to get used to. And I think that honestly, like, he'll get through it. I think that he's a good player and, is a guy that's just going to kind of keep going and work through it. And I think that that's good. I think that, sure, could there be a thought about sitting him down for a game? Maybe you think about that, but I think that he's a guy that will work through it, and I think he'll figure it out. I'm really not, I think a major concern is just based on what we've seen through the first four games. I think long term, the rest of the season, this isn't going to last. Like, there's no way that it does, and I think you kind of just have to have confidence that he's a talented guy and he'll work through it and, get used to the DHing thing, which I think is, would be a difficult thing for anybody to get used to. I think being pretty, decidedly thinking that, okay, you're going to be playing third base for a while, and, that was the goal from, the last baseball administration that was here, that they basically said that you're going to be a third baseman. And I think maybe just the idea that he's got to, change that thinking a little bit, might be messing with him a little bit. But I think it's like, he's too talented to have issues like this. And I just think it's kind of just a matter of time before he figures it out. Kind of like you talk about, guys struggling in spring training or struggling early on in the season, that it's like more often than not, guys that struggle early on like that will figure it out. You mentioned Tristan Casas a couple of weeks ago in terms of like the slow start that he had a couple of years ago, but then turned it on after that first month. And I think that there could be something to be said for here in terms of the fact that Devers really didn't play many spring training games. And I know that you could say, oh, does he really need those games? But it's like, I kind of think he does. He only played in four or five games, and I just think that that's not nearly enough. And so I think that that could also be playing into what's going on here in terms of he's not faced enough live pitching in games, and maybe it's just going to take him a bit to catch up to it. But, I think clearly for this team to be successful, he's going to need to be, their best hitter. He's going to need to be showing up as a star. You expect him to do that. You expect him to be a guy that kind of is a guy that offensively can lead the team. And so, clearly if they're going to go anywhere this season, he's going to have to be, pretty much front and center in terms of the guy that you expect to produce. So, I think hopefully it, turns out for the Red Sox and for him, because I think they got to be able to see production at some point. I feel weird saying that because it's only 4 games into the season. There are 158 games left to play, and clearly he's going to be way more productive than this. He's not going to be 0 for 16 with 12 strikeouts. That's, obviously is not going to continue. But I think, sure, it's, disappointing to come out of the gate losing 3 or first 4, I think, especially after winning the first game in the way that they did. But I do think that, the offense will figure it out. This is not an offense that I expect to be struggling for the majority of the season. Like, I think could just be start of the season, and sometimes, offenses take a little bit to get going. Obviously, it's not the case with a team like the Yankees. If you paid attention to how they did this weekend with all the home runs that they were hitting. But I think there's not really reason yet to be concerned about this team. I think that if we get further into April and they're still struggling to find that offensive identity, then maybe we can start to get worried. But I just think, 4 games into the season, a lot of things can change. And I do expect that, Devers, one of their better, if not their best, offensive player, returns to kind of his usual form. So, hopefully he can get things going. Red Sox are in Baltimore to start this week with a 3-game series against the Orioles. Orioles home opener is this afternoon. Sean Newcomb will start, and then an off day Tuesday, and then the Red Sox will finish the series in Baltimore with games Wednesday and Thursday. Crochet will pitch on Wednesday. Tanner Houck will pitch Thursday, and then the Red Sox home opener against the Cardinals is Friday at 2:10. Walker Buehler will start, and the Red Sox will have a 3-game series against the Cardinals to start their home schedule. So hopefully you can see a Red Sox team be a little bit better at home this season. They kind of have had their issues at Fenway the last couple of years, but hopefully they can kind of, figure things out, get some big hits the way that they kind of weren't able to this weekend in Texas. But I think that they will figure it out. I think there are positives. Campbell was great. It was awesome to see him play as well as he did. And Willy Abreu as well. I think just with the way that spring training started for him with the gastrointestinal issue, really weren't sure if he was even going to be ready for opening day. And sure enough, he was with the 2 home runs and also had a really good series in Texas. So, can feel good about both of those guys. And then hopefully you can see some other guys, pick it up. So I did think it was interesting. Justin Slayton got the save in the season opener, pitched the 9th inning. Chapman pitched the 8th inning and got the win. Liam Hendricks was put on the injured list, I think, right before the season opener. So, kind of looks like Slayton is going to get that first go in terms of being the closer. So, I think clearly one of the areas that I'm interested to see how the Red Sox do is the bullpen. And I think, good start there. Obviously they've not been in any of those other situations, yet, kind of been chasing the lead in the other games. So really didn't get an opportunity to see that bullpen hold a lead. But I think obviously that will be something to watch for. So Red Sox and Orioles will start the 3-game series this afternoon at 2:35. Start in Baltimore, so it'll be interesting to see how the Red Sox do against the Orioles this season. So I think that is likely going to do it for the Red Sox. We're going to jump to the Patriots. We'll get to the big free agency news, but I thought that there was an interesting tidbit this morning. Mike Vrabel was talking to the media and mentioned that Christian Barmore is expected to be available when the Patriots start their offseason workout program. So obviously that's great news. Christian obviously was reported last training camp that he was dealing with blood clots, and so obviously missed majority of last season, came back to play a couple games, and then it seemed like the issue kind of flared up again. But obviously great news that it seems like the Patriots expect him to start the offseason program, assuming health. So I think that that's a great sign. I think that definitely is a guy that clearly makes their defense a lot more formidable. And I think clearly if they can, pair him with Milton Williams, I think you're looking at a pretty good defensive line that's going to be able to get to the quarterback pretty regularly. So excited about that. So obviously the big news last week, the Patriots coming to terms on a 3-year deal with Stephon Diggs. Obviously played with the Texans last season, tore his ACL in week 8, and it sounds like will be ready to be available kind of ahead of schedule, as he said during his introductory press conference last week. So, we kind of talked about this a little bit last week, when it was reported that he was in for a visit. And I think, a guy that's a little bit older for sure, and I think, coming off an ACL injury, is definitely something that you want to watch. But I do think that this is a guy that still has a decent amount of ability. And I still think that despite, not being the guy that he was 3 or 4 years ago that he was in Buffalo, still think that he's a guy that elevates that receiver room, kind of gives you a guy who's a seasoned vet, been there and done that, and I think will be good for some of those younger guys to see how a guy like that works. And I think, just gives the offense, I think, a proven playmaker, which I think is good, and I think is going to make things better for the other receivers on this team. Is going to open things up, having to force defenses to match up against him, and so maybe leaving more favorable matchups to guys like Pop Douglas and Kendrick Bourne and, Polk and some of those other guys, that might get used. So I think overall, I think it's a good signing. Obviously at 3 years, not super wild about that, but it does seem like this does seem to be a contract that's set up in a way that, the Patriots could move on from him after 1 year if it doesn't work. But obviously if it does work, then you want to keep him around. I do think that the $23 million per season, with only 26 guaranteed, I don't think is, that crazy. But I think, clearly there's risk to it. But I think with his age and his injury history, or not injury history, but like coming off the injury. But I think also the way that he's had unceremonious exits from, Buffalo and Minnesota, and I think guys like this can sometimes, be a bit mercurial. And, I think the Patriots hopefully, kind of know what they're getting into and, can have ways to be able to not have that stuff come out, because I do think that they're in a spot here where they're still trying to, or they're trying to, establish a new culture and a new identity. And I think, with a guy like Vrabel here, hopefully none of that, kind of off the field stuff comes into play here, because I think the Patriots kind of can't afford that. Like, I think if they're trying to establish a new culture and identity, it's like you want to make sure that you're bringing in the right guys. And I don't want to sit up here and say that, Stephon Diggs is a bad teammate or anything, but I think, like, there's things that I think they need to be aware of to try to make sure that he's a guy that they're keeping happy. And, I think will be a good weapon for Drake May, but I also think it'll be good to have kind of a vet, seasoned guy around the guys on offense. I think especially the younger guys like Drake May to, see how a veteran like that works. So I think in this particular situation, I think the positives outweigh the negatives. And I think it's still a good signing, but I think definitely there's, some things that I think to be wary of with a guy like this that I think is very talented, but I think sometimes has had some sideline dust ups with some guys where it's like, you want to just make sure that you're keeping that in check. So I think, again, positive signing. I think that makes the team better, makes the offense better, and I think just is going to make things easier. Is going to give Drake May kind of a go-to guy and, take the pressure off of some of the other guys in this offense. Whether it's Ramondre Stevenson, whether it's Hunter Henry, Pop Douglas, or some of the other receivers that, seemingly were being relied upon to do a lot last year. And I think getting somebody like Diggs gives you the ability to rely on him. Obviously he's not going to be a guy that's going to catch 100 passes. I don't think so, but I think gives you a guy that's going to hopefully make things easier for the offense. So I think that probably does it for the Patriots, as we're about a month away from the draft. Obviously coming up, leading up to the draft, we'll be talking quite a bit about, what they might be thinking about here. At number four, they will have a pick in the second round, two picks in the third round, fourth round, fifth round pick, and then three picks in the seventh round. Seventh round, they do not hold a sixth round pick this year. So do the quick math here. That is nine picks in the NFL draft for the Patriots this season. So I think that's going to do it for the Patriots. We're going to move on, talk a little bit about the Celtics. So make sure here that, oh, that's what I missed. I knew I'd missed something. Patriots released Juwan Bentley last week as well, which I think kind of a bit of a surprise to me. Obviously missed the majority of last season with an injury. I don't know. I was surprised that they moved on. Obviously, they brought in a couple of different linebackers this offseason. Christian Ellis, well, he was brought back. But, signing Jack Gibbons, Kalavon Chiasson, and let's see, Robert Spillane, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah, so I think Patriots definitely remaking that linebacker position. Tough to see Bentley go. I thought that, always liked his leadership and the way that he played, but I think clear that the Patriots are trying to kind of establish a new culture. So maybe that was part of the reason, but seemed like he was in good spirits despite getting released. But I think definitely a guy that meant a lot to the Patriots in the last couple of seasons. So tough to see him go, but I think clearly there's going to be new leadership established, and I think that that's exciting, but definitely tough to see him go, as I think Joe Cardona is the only guy left on this roster that has any connection to any of the Super Bowl teams, so that's kind of tough. But, new era for the Patriots for sure, but definitely tough to see a guy like Bentley go, who I think had become a really solid player the last couple of seasons. So now we're going to move to the Celtics, who are wrapping up their West Coast road trip. Got a bit of an injury scare last week. Jason Tatum twisted his ankle as Domantas Sabonis kind of had a reckless closeout and was called for a flagrant foul. Tatum twisted his ankle, but only missed one game and then came back to play against the Spurs with 29 points and 8 assists. So clearly that did not slow him down. Celtics have won each game on the road trip. Not really have had to sweat much. 18-point win against the Kings, a 30-point win against the Suns, in which Porzingis had 30 points, and then the win against the Spurs on Saturday with Tatum 29 points and 8 assists, and Luke Kornet was unbelievable in that game. Had 16 rebounds in that game and I think 15 points, but came off the bench and was spectacular. Really, I think helped the Celtics quite a bit in that second half. So yeah, 15 points and 16 rebounds, a plus 21 off the bench. I think played one of his best games as a Celtic, which is always awesome to see the Celtics getting, good positive play from their bench. I think Baylor Shireman getting a lot of minutes lately has been excellent to see. I think he's really responded and is playing at such a confident level, which I think is awesome. Obviously, he's not going to be a guy that's going to knock down six threes every game, but is playing with great confidence. And I think you're seeing that not only with his shot, but I think his ability to run the floor, create space, and create opportunities for other guys. Had some unbelievable passes in that game against the Suns. Had that move that looked like Rajon Rondo in the game against the Suns. But I think just a guy that looks so comfortable in what he's doing, and I think it's a great testament to him, but I think it's a great testament to the Celtics coaching staff, I think, as well, to be giving a guy like that confidence. And the Celtics, I think, knew exactly what they were doing, picking a guy that was a 5-year college player and a guy that's played a lot of basketball, and I think is a really experienced guy, but playing with that confidence level is just, you think that this Celtics team can't possibly be they are already such a deep team, and you think it can't get even better. And then it's like you see guys like Shireman playing like that and playing with great confidence, and it's like, holy cow, where do they come up with getting guys like this? And you look at guys like Tatum and Brown and Porzingis that get it done consistently every night, but then it's like guys coming off the bench that you can count on for consistent minutes. It's not like the bench group from a couple years ago where you bring them in, you have no idea what's going to happen. So, knowing that you can count on those guys to play hard and knock down shots, play effective defense, and just be, in Luke Kornet's case, be an absolute monster on the boards. So he had 16 rebounds, 9, or 16 rebounds, 7 offensive rebounds. And just was awesome in this game and great in a game where I think Jaylen Brown and Porzingis, didn't affect the game as much offensively as maybe they did in Phoenix. Porzingis had only 11 points against the Spurs, but had 30 points against the Suns, and the Celtics really in that game were able to do whatever they wanted offensively. The Suns are not too good of a basketball team if you've watched them this season. So the Celtics really did a great job taking advantage of that defense and just making sure that they're ready for the postseason. So I think it's great to see that they're winning all these games and getting comfortable. But, I think the rhythm, is the most important thing, that Porzingis is healthy in rhythm, playing really well. Obviously, he's not going to score 30 points every game, but I think just being kind of that deterrent at the rim, being a solid option offensively, and kind of just creating this sense of the Celtics really being whole and really having, all options at their disposal, being able to start their usual starting five and, guys kind of sliding into place more naturally, and I think guys are obviously going to start getting, games off down the stretch as the Celtics get ready for that, postseason run that hopefully is going to be pretty long. 8 games left for the Celtics, finishing up the road trip tonight in Memphis at 7:30, and then they'll have home games this week against the Heat, the Suns, and the Wizards. And then once they're done with that, there are 4 more games left in the regular season. So Celtics definitely playing at a really high level, which is great to see. And I think great to see at this point in time, and really, I think, move past that, slow kind of, dog days of the season that they were going through, in January. And I think they just look so much more comfortable and so much more prepared and ready for this, postseason run. But I also think, as you talk about the Shiremen, getting, guys off the bench to be comfortable is going to be huge, because you never know if somebody like Shireman gets, his number called in a playoff game, and hopefully the Celtics have enough health that, they just roll through with the starting five and then the guys off the bench and Horford, Cornette, Hauser, and Pritchard. But, I think a guy like Shireman, a guy like Torrey Craig could absolutely be useful, in a playoff run that I think is likely going to be more challenging than it was last season. Obviously the Celtics were helped by some injuries from other teams, but I do happen to think that the Eastern Conference may be a little bit more challenging this season. So I think any kind of help that you can get from unexpected places, is great. So I think for the Celtics, it's simple. I think it's just kind of to keep doing what they're doing and, be confident in the process and, kind of continue to be working on things as the season comes to a close. It's a, I don't want to say it's too bad, but I kind of feel like there could be more to talk about with the Celtics. But I think, for them, it's just kind of getting ready for the postseason. I do think that this is a group that, you almost feel better about their depth right now than you did last season. I know that kind of sounds crazy, and maybe it's because Porzingis is healthy and, you didn't have him at your disposal for the majority of the playoffs last season. And it just feels like with him in the fold and likely, hopefully going to be healthy, it kind of just becomes that X factor for the team. So I think, yeah, definitely guys will get games off down the stretch as the Celtics are, pretty much locked in to that number one seed, a number two seed. Although the Cavaliers have been losing some games lately, so I don't think it's enough for the Celtics to make it up, but it is kind of interesting that you kind of have looked at the standings and, oh, Cavaliers lost again. So I want to say they're like 4.5 games back. I'll take a look. Or we'll take a look at the standings later. Obviously the Celtics were sold, so that's kind of a story there. I don't feel like I have a lot to share about there. Bill Chisholm will be the, owner, and will have the majority of the shares in a couple of years. Wick Grousbeck will still kind of run the day-to-day operations for the next couple of years, I think I understand. I don't know. I don't really know too much about that sort of thing, so that is significant. I think you just hope that the new ownership group, does enough to keep this team together, that they don't mind, paying all those tax bills, which obviously is going to be insane. But it's like, I think you just hope that there's not, an element of trying to fix what's not broke. I think that's really what my main concern is, that, it kind of is just, I don't want to say hands off, but it's kind of like you let the basketball people do what they're going to do. And I just, you don't want the team to be making, rash decisions to, I'm not really sure. I just don't want that to be happening. I think it's just like, I don't want much to change. I think just with this particular team and the way that things are going, they have it pretty good. And I just feel like don't want to be out here trying to, fix something that's not necessary to fix. The Celtics have a good team here, and I think are in great position to be, in contention for multiple championships in the near future. So I think that probably does it for the Celtics. I think Celtics will wrap up the road trip tonight in Memphis at 7:30, and then they will have games this week at home against the Heat, the Suns, and the Wizards. So I think that's going to do it. We're going to jump to the Bruins. We're continuing their free fall with their eighth straight loss on Saturday night in Detroit, losing 2-1 to the Red Wings. It just is unfortunately getting uglier and uglier for this team that has only won five games since the start of February. So, it's been pretty ugly. This is a stretch that the Bruins are 4 wins, 13 losses, and 3 overtime losses, which is not good. That's 20 games and they've won four of them. So, things just are pretty ugly right now. There's really not much to say. Bruins had a bunch of off days last week, losing to Anaheim, losing to Detroit. Morgan Geekie continues to score some goals, which is good to see. I think, that's kind of the only positive that I can pull out of, the last two games that you're seeing him score goals. I think he'll get close to 30 goals. And I think, in my opinion, I think he's clearly a guy that you want to keep, a guy that plays well with Pastrnak. And, I think if you're really doing this kind of retool, rebuild, whatever you want to say, it's, I think, best to establish guys that play well with your stars. And I've probably said this before, but it's like this is a Bruins team that has struggled so much to score goals this season that I feel like anybody trying to tell you that they shouldn't re-sign Morgan Geekie, I think is crazy because, he's the only other guy that's been consistent offensively whatsoever this season. The Bruins are not in a position to be giving away guys that are going to score 30 goals. Like, Bruins have, enough games left that he'll get to 30 goals. And I just feel like they are not in a position to say, no thanks, we're not going to re-sign a 30 goal scorer. Like, I'm sorry, that's just crazy. If anyone tries to tell you that they shouldn't re-sign him, they absolutely should. Is he a top line guy? Maybe not, but it's like 30 goals on a team that's not been good. It's like I don't know what we're thinking about if we're saying no, we don't want to re-sign that guy with a team that's been so like strapped for goals this season. It's one of the worst seasons the Bruins have had in terms of goal scoring, and it's just to say that, oh, we don't want this guy, like, I don't know. I don't know what the rationale is to not keeping him, but I think he's been one of the few positives that you've seen majority of the season. Obviously had a bad start, but he's got 27 goals. 27 goals with 8 games to go. So in all likelihood, I think he's going to hit 30. And I think other than Pastrnak has been your best offensive player for the majority of the season. So, I think like to keep him, to be perfectly honest. I think there are other guys too that probably deserve keeping around, Mason Lowry for sure. But I think honestly, outside of the key guys, obviously, that you're going to keep and Swayman and Pastrnak, McAvoy and Hampus Lindholm, I think everybody else really, I think, should be on the table to get moved. I don't know. I don't think they're moving Zadorov and Elias Lindholm. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think that there's a reason to think that like every other roster spot should be open, or you shouldn't be in a position where you're like, oh, you can't move this guy, and that includes, Pavel Zacha, I would say for sure. Like, you would think about possibly moving him, Andrew Peak, any of those regular guys that I think possibly return. But it's like the other guys that you brought in at the trade deadline, they probably stay. Kuznetsov and Casey Mittelstadt and, Lauko, who I know is reacquired, but, I think those guys stay. But other than that, it's like there's a lot of moving parts, I would say, this offseason. But Morgan Geekie is a guy that you should keep. Mason Lowry obviously is a guy that you keep. And I think, hopefully you can see the Bruins really give Fabian Lysell a chance to break through. It's great to see that he's getting in some game action. It's stuff because the team's not playing very well and you'd like to see him be productive, but it's hard to be, you know, when they're playing on a team that just really kind of struggles for any kind of offense. But good to see him getting into games at least. You know, hopefully you can see somebody like Markelov before the end of the season. You know, not really sure what's going on there, but you know, I think just trying to find the little positives before the season's over. You know, I know it's difficult. You know, in this program, we always try to be positive about the teams, even when they're not doing well. But it is difficult because you're not getting enough scoring. You know, the defense is bad. The goaltending, you know, has not been able to be consistent really whatsoever this season. And, you know, I think it's, as I kind of said before the season started, you know, I think Jeremy Swayman kind of just got behind the eight ball with all the contract stuff, missing training camp, and, you know, having to start the season, you know, pretty much during the season, not really being able to have a way to kind of ramp up. And so it's just, I think it's not a surprise that he struggled as much as he has this season. I do think that that contract situation definitely hurt him. So it's just, the hope is that he's better with a full off season. You know, that's the hope, because you know, if he comes back next season and is playing like this again, you know, I obviously think the Bruins made a huge mistake with that contract. You know, obviously when you signed him to that, you know, you're signing him pretty much for that past performance in the playoffs, which was really good. But it's just like, you hope that he can kind of figure it out, that hopefully it's more of kind of a knock on him missing training camp and the defense not being good. You know, they've been without McAvoy and Lindholm for months. You know, Lindholm's been out for pretty much, like, at this point, the majority of the season. So it's like, you've missed a lot of key guys. You know, they're playing pretty much with, you know, Zadorov playing as their number one defenseman with, you know, Joakim Harju and, you know, Wotherspoon and Low Ryan Peak, you know, which is not really the best defense core. Like, it's kind of not surprising that they're struggling as much as they are. You know, Joakim Harju is a guy that I'm kind of curious about whether the Bruins keep him around. You know, I think he's been okay, not really anything spectacular, but you know, he's another guy that came in at the trade deadline that, you know, he is going to be a free agent, so it is possible that the Bruins re-sign or don't. You know, I wouldn't really be surprised either way, but I do know that, you know, they are a team with losing Brandon Carlo. You know, they're down a right shot defenseman, so it might make sense to keep him around. You know, keep him with, you know, Peak and McAvoy as your right shot guys. But the Bruins may move on from Peak. You know, who knows? I happen to like Andrew Peak, and I would like to keep him around. I think he's signed for one more season, so kind of see maybe what he does next season, you know, what his game looks like. But you know, I think for this team, it's just finishing out the season, and hopefully can finish out the season positively with 8 games left. So you know, it's difficult because clearly this team's not going to the playoffs, and so it's hard to really kind of have any optimism. But you know, hopefully 8 straight losses kind of forces them to regroup and try to pick their game back up. But you know, I'm not super confident. You know, this is a team that's not really shown you any kind of identity this season, and kind of seems like lately they're going through the motions. You know, it's nice to see them not get blown out in Detroit after, you know, those losses in, you know, Anaheim and Los Angeles, where they lose by a combined score of 13-4. I think Swayman played okay in that Detroit game. You know, that first goal he let in was not good, but I thought played great the rest of the game, gave the Bruins a chance to win. But obviously when they're as, you know, strapped for offense as they are, games like that are going to happen. And it's like, lo and behold, who was the guy that scored? You know, Morgan Geekie, I think that was him that scored in Detroit. It could have been Pastrnak. No, it was Geekie. Yeah, he did get a goal in Detroit, you know, and they're strapped for offense. But here's a guy that has 27 goals. That's a guy that you should keep around. I don't really feel like there's any kind of argument to not keeping him around, but we'll see how the Bruins do the next couple of games. They got four games this week. They are pretty busy. They will host the Capitals at the Garden tomorrow night. Alex Ovechkin, 5 goals away from breaking the all-time goals record. Don't think he's scoring 5 goals against the Bruins, but you never know. Bruins will travel to Montreal Thursday, and then we'll host the Panther, or, excuse me, we'll host the Carolina Hurricanes on Saturday, and then they will travel to Buffalo to take on the Sabres Sunday afternoon. So 4 games for the Bruins this week. So I think that will do it for the Bruins. We're going to move on, talk a little Revolution. Picked up their first win of the season on Saturday afternoon against the Red Bulls. Carlos Hill with both goals, scoring a tremendous free kick goal in the first half, and then adding a penalty kick in the last couple of minutes in stoppage time to give the Revs a 2-1 win, which was great to see them get a win at home, first win of the season. Good to see them get some goals that were not. That wasn't an own goal. Obviously, both of those goals are set piece goals, so they're not like run of play goals. So the Revs still have to get that, but good to see them get the win against the Red Bulls. Just good to see a win. I think a game that they really desperately needed to win. And I think Caleb Porter made that pretty clear going into the game that, this was going to be the game that they had to have. So great to see them get a result. Get a win, I think really important to see this team get a win is kind of they've struggled to maintain any kind of offensive, identity. So I think great to see goals from Carlos Hill, a guy that has really picked up this team time and time again when they've really needed him to. And I think, you started to see some good chances for this team on Saturday, which I think is good. I think that they did a good job against the defense of the Red Bulls, opening things up. It was interesting to see Peyton Miller get a chance to start for the first time this season, so that was good. I think the Revolution really needed Luca Langone to be a little bit more aggressive. It seemed like he had a number of chances in this game, but kind of was not as aggressive to shoot, which I'm not really sure why, but I think they're going to need other guys to be confident in their offensive game, if they're going to be doing anything this season. Obviously, Berruti started as the striker. Revs are going to be without Campana for a little bit of time, so I think, important to get a win, but I do think that they want to continue to try to have that offensive momentum to be able to have guys that they're confident in to score goals. So the Revs will travel to FC Cincinnati this weekend, 7:30 start on the road. So Revs will be on the road for the next 2 weeks as they will play Cincinnati and Atlanta. Good win for the Revs as they pull themselves out of the basement in the Eastern Conference to get their first win of the season. So we'll see if they can get it going. Revs will play a Cincinnati team that has already won 3 matches this season. 3 wins, 1 draw, and three wins, one three wins, 1 draw, 2 losses. Revolution are at 1 win, 1 draw, and 3 losses with 4 points. So I think it's going to do it for our Revs update. We're going to get to looking at some March Madness updates here. The men's Final Four has been decided after the Elite Eight took place this weekend. So Auburn beating Michigan State in the South Regional Final, and then Houston beating Tennessee in the Midwest Regional Final. And then Saturday night, we saw Duke winning the East Region, crushing Alabama. And then Florida using a comeback in the second half to win the West Region, beating Texas Tech. So you're seeing all four number one seeds in the Final Four. I think you're going to see some really great matchups. Auburn and Florida will play. So SEC matchup there. They'll play the first game Saturday at 6. And then Duke and Houston will play the later game at 8:49. So winners obviously will play in the championship. I think you should see some really good matchups. I think that, Auburn's been really solid in the tournament. Florida, I think, using a good second half to win, over Texas Tech. And then Duke, I think clearly is the most talented team in the tournament. So I think I fully expect them to win. I think that Auburn or Florida could make it interesting, I think, with how deep those teams are. But I really do think it's Duke's tournament to lose at this point with just how good they've been, how solid, consistent they've been. There's not really been a team that's come close to kind of playing them well as, you look at all three games that they've played, or all four games they've played to this point. No one's really come close. Arizona obviously gave them a good scare, but I think clearly Duke is, in my opinion, head and shoulders, I think, best of any team in the tournament. But Auburn and Florida are deep, so I think that one of those teams could certainly give them some issues in the championship. Houston, I think, is a very good team. They're a very good defensive team. I just feel like playing against Duke, you're going to need to be able to score at least 75 points. And Houston, I don't think, is a team like that. But I do think that if they, play lockdown defense, they could make it interesting. But I do like Duke in that semifinal. As far as the other one, it's really a toss-up. I think both teams, Florida and Auburn, are pretty, evenly matched, two very deep teams, well-coached teams. But there's something different about this Auburn team this year that I feel like they are out to prove that, trying to kind of, avenge last year's first round loss. So I think Auburn wins. I think it's close. I think Auburn Duke meet up in the championship. And obviously, championship will be next Monday, so we'll get in a good preview for the championship game next week. So we'll take a look at the women's bracket. They have two teams that have already advanced to the Final Four. Number one seed UCLA in Regional One, and then number one seed South Carolina in Regional Two. And so the other spots are up for grabs tonight: USC against UConn, and then Texas against TCU. So those two matchups in the Elite Eight for the right to advance to the Final Four. The winner of USC and UConn will play UCLA in the Final Four, and then the Texas TCU winner will play South Carolina in the Final Four. That both men's and women's Final Four will be next weekend. So I think that's probably going to do it for NCAA tournament updates. I'm going to take a look at some notes from around sports. Take a look at some NBA notes here. There was a quite a brawl in the Pistons and Timberwolves game last night as seven people were ejected, a couple coaches and players. The Cavaliers reaching 60 wins with the win yesterday against the Clippers for the first time that they've hit 60 wins without LeBron James on the roster. And we'll take a look at the standings, or actually, we'll take a look at some games on the schedule first. Celtics and Grizzlies at 7:30. Grizzlies recently let go of Taylor Jenkins, their coach, last week. So it'll be interesting to see how that works for the Grizzlies as we're pretty close to the end of the season. 7 o'clock games on the schedule: Utah against Charlotte, Sacramento against Indiana, the Clippers against the Magic, and then the Heat against the Wizards. At 8 o'clock, Chicago and Oklahoma City, 8:30, Brooklyn and Dallas, and then 10 o'clock on TNT, Houston and the Lakers. So we'll take a look at the standings as I'd say most teams have about 7 or 8 games left before the end of the regular season. Cavaliers in first in the East, but only 4.5 games up on the Celtics as they are only 5-5 in their last 10. Celtics, meanwhile, have won nine of their last 10 and have won 8 straight games. So they are only 4.5 back of first place. Don't think they're going to catch the Cavs, but Kind of interesting that it's as close as it is. The Knicks are in third. So Celtics and Knicks have both clinched playoff spots in the East. Then Pacers in fourth, followed by the Pistons and the Bucks in fifth and sixth, and then in the play-in spots, Hawks at seven, Magic at eight, Bulls ninth, and then the Heat 10th. The Raptors are 5.5 games back of that final play-in spot. Seem unlikely to catch the Heat. They are the only team that has not been eliminated from the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. All the other teams, Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Charlotte, and Washington, have already been eliminated. In the Western Conference, Oklahoma City still with a huge lead for first place in the West, as they have clinched the conference at this point. Houston in second, Denver in third, followed by the Lakers, Grizzlies, and Warriors in the top six. And then in the play-in spots, you have Minnesota, the Clippers, the Mavericks, and the Kings, with Phoenix a game and a half back of the Kings for that final play-in spot. So I think I'm going to move on here. Get to some NHL notes. Alex Ovechkin obviously scored again for the Capitals yesterday. He is now just 5 goals away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's NHL record. So obviously that will be exciting to watch toward the end of the season to see if he breaks the record. Leon Draisaitl became the first player this season to score 50 goals over the weekend. And sadly, Brad Marchand made his Panthers debut over the weekend, assisting on an overtime goal. So obviously that was kind of disappointing to see him in a Panthers uniform, but honestly, good for him. But it's definitely tough to see as a Bruins fan, being eliminated at the hands of the Panthers the last 2 years, and then see Marchand go and join them. It's kind of tough, but good for him. I think hopefully it's a good opportunity for him, but definitely weird to see him in another team's uniform. Take a look at some baseball notes. The Blue Jays' Max Scherzer is going on the injured list, is going to see a hand specialist. The Yankees sweeping the Brewers, an unbelievable offensive series with home runs after home runs, and kind of made me envious being a Red Sox fan and seeing all those home runs. So Yankees off to a good start, outscoring the Brewers 36-14 in their first series of the season. Red Sox, losing three of their first four, but only getting outscored by 2 runs this weekend. So hopefully that changes as they take on the Orioles this afternoon. Yankees, Dodgers, Padres, and the Cardinals are undefeated after the first series of the season. Dodgers actually had won the first two games with that Tokyo series a couple weeks ago. So they, won their weekend series, as did the Padres and as did the Cardinals. So I think we're going to take a look some NFL notes. I think that there are league meetings going on this week. There's rumors that the Tush Push may possibly be banned as there's support amongst the owners. So be interesting to see what happens there. And I think that's going to do it for NFL notes. Really not much to keep track of at this point, but more free agent news will keep you updated. So I think that's going to do it for the sports this week. Got a great top five for you guys this week. Really looking forward to this. Did a lot of, work on this yesterday. So excited to list my top five sports video games. Now, obviously, me being as much of a sports nut as I am, love sports video games. It's like one of the main reasons why I got into sports in the first place at such a young age, but this was difficult for me because I kind of had a hard time ranking them. So this isn't necessarily what my official ranking is, but it's like I think the top five games that I have are the top five. Not sure, if the ranking is exactly correct, but All five of those games are great, and I have a lot of honorable mentions as well. So we'll get into this. So we'll do number five here. SSX Tricky, which is a snowboarding video game, probably one of the most fun games that you will ever play. I definitely had a lot of fun playing this game. Obviously kind of or obviously an action sports game, which is kind of not the typical game that I would play, but had so much fun playing that game and kind of could just play it over and over and over. All the different like tracks you could play on, or like venues. I don't know what to call them exactly, but super fun game. So I think that's number five for me, number four. So I think for the top five, just in general, I tried to choose one game for each sport, if that makes sense. So number four, I have Madden 2004. Also a game that just had so much fun playing when I was younger. Obviously, this game with Michael Vick, who is just pretty much one of the most dominant players in the history of sports video games, in this game was pretty much unbeatable. Had like a 95 speed, which was crazy for a quarterback, but just a really fun game. The mini games were really fun, like the little training camp games you could play. Great music in this game too, but I think definitely the first football game that I really fell in love with, Madden 2003, I think was the first football game that I ever got, but I think Madden 04 was definitely the most fun I've ever had playing Madden. So I think that's a good number four. Number three, I have NHL 10. Me being a huge hockey fan, had to have a hockey game in the top three. I think that NHL 10 is a game that I played the most. I even played years after the game was like, I was probably still playing this game 5 or 6 years ago, which tells you how much fun the game was. It just is like a game that I could just never get sick of. Just a really cool kind of era of NHL hockey. The Bruins were a fun team to play with, with Lucic and Phil Kessel and Mark Savard. Kind of crazy that that trio was on the team, but just a really fun game. The fighting aspect was really, really cool. A lot of just really kind of felt like this game was very immersive in terms of like the pre-game intros before the, if you played a game on this on NHL 10 and like the pre-game introduction stuff was really, really cool. So I really liked that about this game. So I think that's definitely a good number three. Great music in this game too. That's kind of the theme in this top five, that all these games that I'm talking about had great music in it. So number two, MVP Baseball 2005 with Manny Ramirez on the cover. That is, I would say, easily my favorite baseball game. Just really cool mini games, really cool game presentation, all the different game modes that you could do, great music, obviously, and I think just a really fun game. Again, a game that you could play for hours and hours and hours and never get sick of. So, great number two. Number one for me, went basketball here for number one. I do enjoy NBA Live. We'll talk about those games in a moment, but NBA Street Volume 2 has to be my favorite sports game of all time. Just, again, great music in this game. I think in this game in particular, I kind of learned a lot about the kind of history of legends in the NBA, that you could play with a number of different legends in this game. You could obviously play with guys that were, kind of face of the league at that time. So this came out in like 2003. So, Kobe and Shaq were still doing their thing with the Lakers. You had KG, you had Paul Pierce. It was just a really, really fun game. Really just could never get enough of it. And you could also play on some legendary street ball courts too, which I thought was pretty cool. But yeah, just again, a game that you could literally never get sick of. So really, I think good choice for me there at number one. Some honorable mentions. I mentioned NBA Live 2003, first basketball game that I ever got. Great music in that game. NBA Live 2005 is also a fun game. That was the first game that you could do the dunk contest and the 3-point shootout, which was pretty cool. So I think good addition to that game. Also had MLB Slugfest on here. MLB Slugfest Loaded. Really, really fun game, midway sports game that those games are really, really fun, baseball, but kind of a little bit of more of an edgy game, but super fun to play. Definitely had to have that on there. Madden 08, really liked that game. I played that game a lot back in the day with Vince Young on the cover. That was a very fun game to play. College Hoops 2K6, would play this quite a bit back in the day. That was a fun game with UNC or former UNC coach Roy Williams on the cover. I think Marvin Williams is also on the cover of that game. That was a really fun game. Didn't play many college sports games, but the College Hoops game definitely got a lot of mileage out of that. And then I have NHL 2004. I think really good music on this game too. Just had a lot of fun playing with the old, Bruins teams with Joe Thornton and Sergei Samsonov. So that game was fun. You also could do owner mode for the first time in the NHL series, I'm pretty sure. So I had a lot of fun with that. Could also like create your own team, which also had a lot of fun with that too. And then NHL Hits 2003, another Midway Sports games, or another Midway Sports game. Those games are so much fun. Had a lot of fun playing NHL Hits, a lot of great mini games in the 3-on-3. Action made it really, really fun. So I think those are great games. Kind of a trip down memory lane for me to take a look at some of the old games that I used to play. But yeah, some good honorable mentions, a good top five. Would love to hear anybody else that listens to maybe give me some of their favorite sports games, but those are my favorites. Hopefully, I would say hopefully you can play these games, but chances are you probably can't. But definitely fun, kind of a nostalgic trip for this week's top five. So I think that's going to do it for me this week. We'll keep you updated in terms of Guest Friday and whether we're able to record that this week. So if we're able to, we'll talk to you Friday. If not, we will talk to you next week.